Namah
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Deshitarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So first of all, of course, I would like to express my great appreciation for the wonderful entrance into the dynamic pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Sanatan Goswami. I was picturing him with wounds all over his body, open wounds, and resisting being embraced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We'll hear more about that Leela. And then too, it was wonderful to hear some of the swan song of Srila Rupa Goswami. This Utkalika Valari is something of a masterpiece of bhakti. And also going to Uddhava Kund, Chandan Shila, and the Jamuna was also very, very rewarding, very satisfying, and created a wonderful atmosphere for me to now make my presentation. So I began this retreat with one idea in my mind, and the presentation that I'm making actually is quite distinctly different than what I was trying to do. I don't know. So when I was looking for something to prepare, I was thinking about a leela, some leela that I could share in the evening like we would do at Govardhan. And I was thinking particularly about chapter 21 in the 10th canto, which is, of course, the gopis and their intense meditation and on the sound of Krishna's flute, and also their inner meditation on all the other animals and birds in Vrindavan, and how only they, the girls, were unfortunate because everybody else could go to Krishna very easily. And just to get a little bit of a background or a little scenery, I thought to step back one chapter to chapter 20 and read the description that Sukadev Goswami gives of Vrindavan in the rainy season and the autumn. And to tell you the truth, that was a chapter that I had often, I would say, even neglected to read because it seemed like it was just geographical. It didn't have any direct storyline. But I went there, and as I started to read the verses, I began to picture, just as we have been picturing or seeing Vrindavan in the rainy season, and then Vrindavan in the autumn, I began to befriend these beautiful descriptions of Vrindavan. And then I wanted to go a little closer, a little more understanding. And I searched for more information. And in that way, I came across an experience with Srila Prabhupada, where he himself also wanted to present the information in those two chapters to make his first opportunity to get out of India and reach the international world. Now, that was in 1961, when we will hear about, actually, we'll hear about that more. I've written something to share with you so I could collect my thoughts, and this will come up again later. But first of all, I want to speak something about the idea of danger, that Vrindavan is dangerous. It sounds like a warning because there's some lethal disease or some poison in the air or some horrible gundas or something like that. But actually, the essence of what this danger is very important for us to hear. So let me begin. Recently, I was pondering on a verse from the Nectar of Devotion, which describes a conversation between two young girls. One of the girls is telling her friend not to wander along the bank of the Jamuna River, just near a place called Keshi Tirtha, where there's a possibility of encountering a very attractive young boy whose eyes are stunningly beautiful and who is playing an extraordinary melody on a flute. The young girl is warning her friend, saying, if you are determined to stay the way you are now, then please don't go there. Srila Rupa Goswami, a renowned master in the bhakti tradition, is the author of this text. Nearly 500 years ago, during the late 1500s, he placed this Sanskrit verse in his book dedicated to explaining the unique nature of Krishna, of bhakti, and of Vrindavan. There is something he wants to tell us. He's saying, if you like things the way they are now, then don't go there. If you want to remain the way you are now, don't go to Vrindavan. It is very dangerous. These words can be taken in another way. They can be saying indirectly, if you want to be radically transformed, then do go to Vrindavan. Srila Rupa Goswami is giving us a warning, which of course is actually meant to be a heart-opening invitation. But let's reflect a little more upon the danger that he is referring to. If we really decided to enter Vrindavan, what would we encounter and why is it dangerous? This question actually fascinated me as I contemplated it more and more, and I began to understand the nature of the danger and why Srila Rupa Goswami is giving us this warning. So here it is. Vrindavan is dangerous because it will upset all your conceptions. It will redefine your life. It will cause you to think more deeply and insist that you step apart from the current trends and values of the world. It will change all your priorities. It will demand that you become ready to follow what no conditioned soul has ever wanted to do, namely, to remove oneself from the center of their lives and place Krishna there. It will teach you what it really means to serve, and it will highlight the selfishness and the foolishness that results from misidentifying ourselves as independent and joyous. Wow. That's pretty heavy. That's pretty heavy. But that's Vrindavan. Vrindavan holds the key to real love, real life, and real understanding. Vrindavan is dangerous. Now, before preparing this class, I asked myself a very good question. I asked myself, does this experience of redefining your values, learning how to serve, taking yourself out of the center, thinking more deeply, stepping apart from worldly values, does this occur automatically? And does it apply to everyone who visits Vrindavan? And after some reflection, my answer would be both yes and no. Yes and no at the same time. Because after all, Vrindavan is a land of contradictions. So yes and no, this applies. It applies to everyone. And yet, at the same time, it's possible to avoid it if you really, really want to. So let's look first at the yes. As soon as you step out of the taxi and place your feet on the dusty paved road and take a fresh breath of air, you're already touching the sacred dust of Vrindavan externally and also within. So this means you have imperceptibly already changed. Then, when you enter the temple compound, you can take darshan of Srila Prabhupada in the samadhi and then enter the temple proper. And here, which is alive, the temple, which is alive and vibrant with pilgrims coming and going and ladies making garlands and the sound of kirtan 24 hours a day, the mantra is being chanted. And after you have offered your obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, who is seated there in the temple, and stood before the three altars of Sri Sri Gaur-Nitai, Krishna Balaram, Radhashyama Sundar, who are daily worshipped there, you have definitely changed. So whether you like it or not, you will be changed. And there's also a no. No. You may not find yourself magically transformed into someone who only thinks of Krishna and wants to madly drop everything and run after Krishna. Nevertheless, the process has already begun. Already you have embarked upon a journey by coming to Vrindavan. You have embarked upon this dangerous journey. Now here is an encouraging verse written by a very saintly resident of Vrindavan hundreds of years ago. And he says, if one lives in the earthly land of Vrindavan, touches it, sees it, travels to it, meditates upon it, bows down to offer respects to it, sings or hears about it, or carries its dust upon his head, or has any relationship with it at all, then this purifying earthly Vrindavan will carry him to the supreme abode of Vrindavan in the spiritual world. So he is informing us that any connection we have with Vrindavan in this world is imperceptibly changing us. And one day it will carry us to the spiritual world. Our saintly Vrindavan resident continues. He says, I have uselessly spent countless lifetimes agitated with the cares of maintaining my body, my home, my family, and my relatives. Even now, when I am supposed to be intelligent, I am still bewildered by such things. O Vrindavan, your holy name is my only shelter. Do you ever feel like that? Yes, we might say, sometimes I do. But this was where I felt rather awkward as I was preparing, because to be really honest, I have to admit that in essence, I do very much identify myself as a part of this world. There's the place that I call home. I have a family. I see everything around me as tangible. I see current affairs, current problems, current politics and current circumstances as reality. I see my family as real. I see money as real. I see health as real. And I definitely see death as real. To me, these are the realities of life. So how can I give up all of this and go to a place I know so little about? Do you see how if you or I want to keep seeing reality the way that we do, then Vrindavan is very dangerous because it will upset me. It will turbulent make me. I will not feel comfortable there when I'm seeing reality in the world around me. And Prabhupada tells us that Krishna is real. He's really real. He's more real than all the things that you and I can consider real because we can see them, hear them, touch them, and so on. He's real. He's real. He's really, really real. And our Vrindavan saint says, in the spiritual abode of Vrindavan, the land is filled with spiritual splendor. The trees and the vines are spiritual. The birds and the deer are spiritual. The large, beautiful lakes are also spiritual. Everything, the mountains, the rivers, the ponds, the jewels, the minerals, and the clouds are all spiritual. And the many charming forest groves are spiritual also. So, Srila Rupa Goswami, he wants to draw our attention through this conversation that he has written long, long ago between these two young girls, that if her friend were to see Krishna in Vrindavan and hear his flute song, she would definitely, absolutely never be the same again. Her heart would be transformed after experiencing the actual beauty of Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, as I said, I want to share with you something that deeply touched me during my preparation for this retreat. I came in touch through reading the Prabhupada Lilamrita. I came to understand more about the years of hardship and struggle that preceded Srila Prabhupada's departure for America. Prior to 1979, there was very little known about Srila Prabhupada's early life. Many of the things we know now were unknown then. And with a great deal of research, those who were compiling the Prabhupada Lilamrita went here and there around to different places and found out all the information, like a great investigation that we have now that gives us a picture of Srila Prabhupada before he came to America. From 1954 until 1965, Srila Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan in poverty. Externally, he was both poor and elderly. And while other people were living in Vrindavan because they were interested in their bhajan and they were preparing themselves for the end of life, Srila Prabhupada was living there, preparing to start the mission of his life. A lifetime in preparation. From his very birth, it was predicted that he would leave India. And he knew that he had a very special mission to fulfill. Yet in the dynamic tension of that time, right then, he was struggling. In January 1961, he was living in a room on top of the Vamsi Gopal Temple at Keshi Ghat in Vrindavan. Just 3 months before, he had accepted sannyas, and now he was known as Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj. But with almost no money, no followers, and no assistance, still, he was firmly focused upon his mission. So one man in Delhi, who Srila Prabhupada met, showed him a pamphlet which announced a conference called the Congress for Cultivating Human Spirit. It was a convention to be held in Tokyo in May the 10th and 20th, 1961. And the theme was creating world peace through cultivating human spirit. And international participants were invited. And as soon as Prabhupada heard about this, he really, really wanted to go. So he conceived of a project for that convention. In the 10th canto, this chapter 20 of the Bhagavatam, with the description of the two seasons of Vrindavan, Prabhupada thought that Oriental people are very fond of nature, and autumn season is particularly auspicious for them. So he began preparing 48 commentaries on those verses, which he entitled The Light of the Bhagavatam. He believed that presenting spiritual philosophy by examples from nature would be the best thing for their understanding. So his plan was that the organizers of the conference should find a qualified Oriental artist who could illustrate each verse. And he wrote directions from which the artists could design the paintings. This is Prabhupada's ambition, Prabhupada's drive, Prabhupada's vision, when he had nothing to support him. He hoped that the paintings and their accompanied explanations would make a very impressive display for the visitors to the conference. And if possible, he wished that they might publish a book containing all the illustrations and the text. Then he quickly set about to write to produce a 20,000 word document, 20,000 words. So those who have to write essays and so on will understand that that's a significant amount of typewriting or handwriting in a notebook. that Srila Prabhupada was about to embark upon to achieve this opportunity to go to Japan. He said, "I wish to impress upon the delegates who will internationally join the conference for culturing human spirit at Japan about the necessity of an international movement for this purpose in cooperation of all the enlightened people of the world." There was no international movement at that stage. "Kindly, therefore, do the needful immediately and give me a chance to speak to the enlightened people of the world the message of human culture from the Vedic literatures. I am sure that such views will change the angle of vision of the world's activities." So here he was, picture it. He has nothing, no resources, but he has this burning desire to take Vrindavan in the rainy season and the autumn out of India and present this as the greatest necessity for the rest of human culture to understand the beauty and the significant meaning that carries itself along with the beauty of Vrindavan. So the gentleman in charge, he was happy, and he wrote back to Srila Prabhupada, and they expressed high regard for each other, and he made all the arrangements. He sent an official invitation so Srila Prabhupada could leave India, and he offered to take care of all the arrangements whilst he was there. He suggested that Prabhupada could stay an extra month, then he could travel around Japan and meet the mayors of different parts of Japan. And Srila Prabhupada was very excited. But he had no money. So he wasn't disappointed. At first he went to government offices and requested. He went to the Prime Minister of India and requested in a letter to him and then a public meeting, that "I am a renounced person representing our culture. Please make all arrangements so that I can travel in this way." He wrote people that he knew in Bombay. He wrote people around Delhi. He was very, very, very active. But there was no money coming. And finally, he contacted the Japanese gentleman and said to him that as you have developed a deep love for me, I dare to ask you to send me financial help to take me to Japan. I think you can immediately instruct your embassy in Delhi to do the needful and dispatch me to Japan on your behalf. But Mr. Nakano couldn't help. And Bhaktivedanta Swami's efforts ended in a dream only. Now, when I read this little incident, I knew that I was bringing my sentiments to bear. I was thinking how disappointed I would be and how unfortunate it was that Srila Prabhupada couldn't do that. I was feeling sad and sorry for him, and so many thoughts came. But I also understood that Srila Prabhupada knew the nature of Vrindavan. He knew the nature of Krishna. And he knew the nature of bhakti. He wasn't confused. And so somehow he saw that this was Krishna's hand. So Japan seemed to be the plan of Krishna to bring him out, but it wasn't. The time had not yet arrived. There was more work for him to do before he could share Vrindavan with the rest of the world. He did not attend that conference, nor did he create the book he wanted describing the seasons of Vrindavan. 21 years would pass before that book would appear. By that time, he would have already physically departed this world, and yet the manuscript had remained, and followers now remained to do the service on his behalf. Srila Prabhupada said, "For spiritual realization, one has to purify the heart and know things in their true perspective. As soon as one does this, the flow of one's natural affection begins to glide towards the Lord. And with the progress of this flow, one becomes more and more self-realized in various relations with the Lord." This is Vrindavan. This is Vrindavan. If you want to not keep your illusions in place, but instead to remove them, then with open arms and open heart, the sadhus will wholeheartedly insist that you are now ready to visit Vrindavan. And then the greatest danger for you will be that perhaps you will leave your heart there and you'll not be able to find it again. So tomorrow and the next day, we will hear something first about Vrindavan in the rainy season, which we've been so fortunate to actually see with our eyes with these beautiful videos. And then we'll hear about Vrindavan in the autumn season, which is the season in which Krishna very, very masterfully begins to play on his flute. So please come along for this journey and please take the time, if you have it, to read these beautiful descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam separately by yourself, because that little effort to do that will really, it will really be reciprocated with by Krishna when we actually come together again and read these parts of the Bhagavatam and share something of what is actually beyond our eyes, beyond our senses. But where that sweetness is coming from, it's coming from Krishna's presence in Vrindavan in a way, on a level that we can't directly perceive. But almost anyone who goes to Vrindavan recognizes the change or some change that takes place just by visiting there. So thank you. And I repeat, Vrindavan is very dangerous. Hare Krishna.